From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on February 8th when the Rochester City School District began welcoming students back to classrooms for the first time in almost a year. That decision, and we're talking about physical classrooms, that decision came after months of debate and strenuous opposition from the Rochester Teachers Union. Rochester has been the only district in Monroe County that has been fully remote this school year, and that mirrors a trend we see across the country. Generally, urban schools have remained fully remote, while schools in wealthier areas and suburban settings have been back in person with at least a hybrid schedule. Health leaders have repeatedly said that the evidence favors having children back in school settings when possible. That's because, health leaders have told us, schools have rarely been the site of community spread. Of course, coronavirus can spread in any indoor setting with close contact: offices, hospitals, schools. But the research finds that schools have done a very effective job, generally speaking, at cutting down spread. This morning on The Daily, the New York Times podcast, New York Times science journalist Apoorva Mandavilli said that the best summation of the data on whether kids transmit the virus is as follows. It appears that kids 10 years old and younger transmit the virus, they spread the virus, at only half the rate that adults do, at most, potentially even less. Researchers don't know why yet, but the evidence suggests that the younger the child, the lower the chance of transmission. High school adults appear to transmit coronavirus at roughly the same rate as adults. And this week, new data from Germany bolsters the position taken by public health leaders. Germany studied hundreds of cases over a period of 4 months, including 3 months when most students were not even asked to wear masks in the classrooms. We're looking at end of September through most of the end of the year in Germany. The research is summarized by California-based epidemiologist Dr. Monica Gandhi, who writes that this is some of the most comprehensive data on school transmission yet. That's because it was taken during a time of surging COVID numbers in Germany, and yet schools were open and saw very little spread. Researchers tracked 14,000 contacts of infected people. Only 1 in 6 cases resulted in any transmission to others. Teachers were 3 times more likely to transmit than students. And what about people who were pre-symptomatic or asymptomatic? Turns out they were less than half as likely to transmit the virus. Overall, case numbers in schools there remained very low. That doesn't mean that every school district handles the pandemic the same way. It does mean that the evidence is on the side of reopening schools, according to health leaders, if districts are following proper protocols. In Rochester, the RTA has argued that the district is not doing all it can to protect teachers and people in the buildings. We've heard from teachers of all ages in Rochester, some who describe themselves as terrified to be back in the classroom. So let's discuss where we go next and how we handle this complicated problem. Our guests this hour include the president of the Rochester Teachers Association, Adam Urbanski. Adam, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Amy Malloy is with us. Amy is a board member of the Rochester City School District, commissioner, and also a parent, of course. Amy, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Gypsy Escobar, an RCSD parent who supports in-person learning at this stage. Gypsy, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And Leslie Knox is an RCSD parent leader who supports in-person learning. Leslie, welcome. Thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you very much.
Adam, let me start with you. And what I want to at least understand from the outset is, I think, an important distinction here. Is it your contention that, you know, health leaders, pediatricians are generally incorrect that schools should not be viewed as safe for kids? You know, I think everybody understands there's no perfect scenario, perfect place of safety. But do you think that generally they are wrong to make that statement? Or are you saying that, yes, you support their position, but RCSD has failed to meet the protocols that other districts have met? Adam.
Well, mostly the latter. We agree with most of the findings and what science is telling us. But they're also saying, as you already mentioned, that it really depends on whether or not the district takes all the necessary precautions, whether they are faithfully sticking to them, and whether or not they have the readiness level, both in terms of safety and in the case of our district, in terms of doable and effective instructional plan. And I think that's where our district falls short.
Okay. And can you, I mean, we'll talk about it in depth, but Adam, what are some of the examples that you want listeners to understand concern you the most?
Well, on the instructional side, they're asking teachers to teach simultaneously the students in front of them and those on who are remote, without the requisite and relevant professional preparation, without the necessary and requisite technology, without being able to demonstrate how this can be done effectively. On the safety side, they are coming up short on ventilation. For example, when we hired an independent industrial hygienist firm to check on the ventilation system, about half of the schools did not meet the requisite minimum standards. They didn't have MERV 13 filters even. They don't have the necessary and adequate technology and personal protective equipment. They don't know how to administer and provide children with food service, especially a hot meal. They don't have substitute teachers and are asking teachers who are already there to pick up the slack. They have a wait list of families that they cannot accommodate it, and a whole array of other things in addition to the inability to prioritize teachers for vaccination, which is a huge, huge issue and a danger to many of the teachers that we represent.
And Adam, last week, the San Francisco Chronicle reported on a growing mental health crisis in school-aged children, which includes spikes in depression, anxiety, and suicide attempts. And the Chronicle talked to some epidemiologists who are concerned that some of the rates of depression and anxiety come from a lack of connection, a lack of social interaction, and remote learning. Are you concerned about that?
So, very much so. As a matter of fact, that's a primary concern for me and for the teachers that we represent. But this is not really a full picture. There is an image that the district is trying to project that if kids are in school, then they get that socialization and connection with other students and so forth. How can you do that when you're supposed to be 6 feet apart, when you are covering up your face with a mask, when you live in a situation that everyone recognizes as a dangerous situation? So it's not as rosy as the advocates for returning to school would paint it.
Amy Molloy is a commissioner on the school board, a parent, and someone who's been looking at this closely since the beginning. Where are you on the question of reopening?
So, yeah, I fully support reopening. I'll tell you that to begin with. I was probably, along with my husband, we were the first, one of the first families to say we wanted our students back, or our four children back in school. But then we changed our mind based on the survey that came out, and the instructional model itself was not clear at that point. And I think a lot of families that ended up choosing to stay remote for their families, it was based on what the district had projected, which was that they were going to only get, if you remained remote, you would get 4 days of synchronous instruction. Whereas if you chose hybrid, it was first advertised to our families as 2 days of synchronous instruction and then, you know, 3 other days of asynchronous instruction. So while initially my family chose to immediately have our kids back in school, you know, for remote learners, some of my kids are doing okay with it. My junior is certainly handling remote instruction quite well. She's very self-sufficient. She's an AP student. She's handling it well, although she wants to go back. My younger students, seventh grader, fifth grader, and third grader, they are not doing well. They are struggling, and especially my third and fifth grader. It is not something that they can do on their own, and I know I go to work every day as a teacher. My husband's a school administrator. He goes to work every day, so we aren't here to supervise their learning. So we actually made the hard decision based on what we had been told by the district, based on instructional time. We made the decision to switch back from hybrid back to remote, realizing that perhaps our kids were better off because they would have 4 days of synchronous instruction. Well, then it came out, you know, a few weeks later that no, the actual hybrid plan will be 4 days of synchronous learning, because they had opted at that point to go with the synchronous or the simultaneous instructional model, which, you know, most board members, we weren't aware that that was going to be the instructional model rolled out to the district mid-year. The districts that have currently rolled out that model and are using it, there are two or three districts in the area using that, mostly for high school age students. You know, it wasn't rolled out mid-year. It was rolled out in the summer, and they started the year with that. So to disrupt an entire learning model mid-year is a very heavy burden for teachers to have to bear. And how effective is that going to be for both our hybrid and our remote learners? So long story short, you know, our family changed our mind and said, okay, we're going to stay remote. But then once we realized that the hybrid instruction would actually be more synchronous instruction, we tried to switch back. And we, along with 400 other families, ended up waitlisted across the district. So, you know, 30% of our families have opted for hybrid instruction, which is important. We've got to get our kids back into the classroom. They need to have their teachers in front of them. I'm a teacher. I teach sections of hybrid learners, and I also teach sections of remote learners from my classroom, but I'm not doing it simultaneously. We have separate sections. And so I think most teachers have been really trying to understand remote learning and get that down pat. And now to suddenly pull the rug out from under them mid-year is very dangerous. And I don't think it reflects very good planning on the district's part. So we're waitlisted along with 400 other families. We were initially told it was transportation issues, but, you know, I've been touring schools first week of reopening phase two. I've been in those classrooms. I've looked and I got a question, a model that where you see one or two kids in-person learning in a classroom surrounded by maybe two or three adults in the same classroom, and then you have the rest of the class up on a screen, is that a really good use of our resources as a district? And those are some questions that still have not been answered for me as a commissioner and as a parent. And I think more of our district should be asking these questions and more of our parents. I want my kids back in class. But what we are currently seeing is a model that cannot grow. We only 30% of our families are back in the classroom, which I want to see kids back. But if it's only 30% of our kids, what's happening to our most at-risk learners did not opt either for hybrid or remote instruction?
Let me just ask you
how are they going to fall through the cracks?
Let me just ask you about that, Amy, real briefly, and then we'll turn to Gypsy and Leslie. I take the point as you say that, you know, 70% so far of kids are remaining remote, full remote. Only 30% are back in the classroom at this point. Does that potentially reflect, Amy, parents who are not just making that decision in a vacuum, or families not making that decision in a vacuum, but hearing that, well, the RTA says it's not safe. The RTA says not to do it. And they're influenced by what they're hearing from their teachers.
Well, I don't quite get that message from RTA. And Adam, forgive me if I'm wrong on this, but that's not the entire message that I'm getting. And I don't think that with this issue we can say you're either pro-RTA or pro-RCSD on this matter. But it's just so much more nuanced than that. We need to make sure that we're breaking down each of the issues. My major concern with rolling out this plan, because it was very rushed, and from the time that we learned that there was a simultaneous model being adopted by, you know, a chief academic officer who has only been in one of our elementary schools and is telecommuting from another state, that doesn't give us a lot of confidence in this model. And the teachers who are actually on the ground doing the work. So my main objection has been that this is too rushed and that while we can make a simultaneous instructional model work, doing it so hastily is actually putting many of our remote learners at risk. And those learners, many of the 70% that we're talking about, many of those students aren't engaging in remote work. Those are the kids who need to be back in the classroom, you know, one-on-one with a teacher. Those are the kids who are falling through the cracks. And many of the families that we see that are coming back are really vocal. And I applaud those families for being so vocal, for wanting to be back in the classroom. Leslie and Gypsy, thank you so much for your advocacy to get our students back into the classroom. We need to be back. However, why do we need to rush it if an instructional model is not going to support all of our learners in the way that it needs to? So that is my primary concern.
Okay.
I want to applaud the district employees for the work that I see them doing. I've been touring schools all week. I've been touring facilities. I had tours by our facilities administrators. I went to our transportation department. I do believe that we can provide a safe environment for our teachers. However, there's inequity in our district. We see things in some schools that don't look the same as others. A school like School 12, as they're ready to go, right? They've got a beautiful facility. And then in some of our other facilities, we've got principals buying supplies out of their own pocket to make sure their teachers are feeling prepared. So I applaud our facilities. I applaud what they're trying to do. But we have to wonder, rolling out something so quickly, why couldn't we take a step back, put everyone at the table, come up with some compromises and solutions together so that more people are feeling comfortable about this, especially our teachers who are doing the work. What can we do to prepare them and make them feel more comfortable? I've been back in my classroom since September, you know, and I wear a mask and I follow safety protocols. And how can we make our teachers feel heard about their concerns and safe at the same time? And we need to do more to make sure that we're making people feel heard in this pandemic.
All right, let me get Gypsy Escobar. You're the mom of a six-year-old boy. Tell us about your decision and where you are on this, Gypsy.
Sure, Evan, thank you. So my six-year-old's a first grader, and he just like hit a wall with remote. He was not excited about learning where he had been before. And we just thought the best choice for him was to go hybrid when we were asked back in December. But I want to address that 70% and 30% numbers that Dr. Lombardi and Ms. Malloy keep repeating. That 70% number included parents that were undecided at the time because, sure enough, they did not have enough information about hybrid, how hybrid was going to work. And it includes people who were not being able to be contacted, and they were just defaulted into the remote. And, you know, like Ms. Malloy says, there is now 400 families in a wait list, which, you know, means that once people knew how it was going to work, people really wanted to go back to school. The other concern that as parents we have, and I co-wrote with several other parents a petition on change.org, to respond to the RTH leadership resolution of no confidence to the district, to push for continuing with the phased reopening of schools, because we felt also that the families that chose hybrid, that our voices were being silenced by the RTH leadership, that it continues to be silent continue to misrepresent that 70% number. A lot of what the RTA leadership has been saying about parents who are speaking up for what they think is best for their children, they're calling us that is we're just a minority, that we're, you know, just it's just a lot of about teacher bashing. Well, it's more than 3,000 families, right? More than 3,000 kids. We might be a minority, but it's not an insignificant number. Mm-hmm. And in terms of teacher bashing, it's not that at all. We love our teachers. We love them. And, you know, I can speak from my experience that my kids' teachers have been nothing but professional throughout the whole process. They have, you know, they have gone the extra mile to figure out the technology to work through the remote. They have gone the extra mile to have flexibility and creativity to make hybrid work. And I just can tell you that, like, my kid's attitude just completely changed that Monday and Tuesday when he went back to the classroom and saw his friends, saw his teacher. You know, like, that, like, it's a struggle every morning to get him up to sit up in front of the computer with remote. When he knew he was going back to the classroom, he was ready in 10 minutes. On Tuesday, he said this. He said, like, my body is filled with excitement for going back to school. So, you know, like, there, I think, like, there has been enough evidence out there. The New York Times published an article that with a survey of 175 pediatricians who are epidemiologists, saying that the cost of keeping kids out of school is much higher than the cost of bringing it in. The risk of transmission, of in-school transmission, is very minimal. It's not zero, but it's very minimal and can be mitigated. And masking is the most important thing. Beyond ventilation, beyond anything else, masking is the key. So I still feel like, you know, the argument that it's unsafe, that there is no instruction, there's no instructional model, on the one hand, you know, dismisses the science and the facts. And on the other hand, it quite frankly also dismisses all the effort that teachers are putting to find creative solutions. And I do have a question for Dr. Urbanski. What kind of professional development is RTA offering teachers at this moment? It's not just, you know, sure, the RCSD has a responsibility here, but the union who is representing the teachers and making an argument that there is not enough instructional development or professional development to teach simultaneously, what is the RTA doing in that regard?
If I may, I would like to respond to that, but I think it's unfair, Ms. Escobar, to say that RTA is silencing anybody's voices. RTA feels a responsibility to tell the truth and to caution families that indeed it is not as safe as they are being led to believe. For example, if we had not hired industrial hygienists to check the ventilation, whether it's adequate, because we're talking here about an airborne virus. Airborne virus in enclosed spaces for a prolonged period of time is a danger. Not only science tells us that, but common sense tells us that. So when we hired independent inspectors, they found half of the schools not to be not up to the accepted professional standards for ventilation. Now, the district is assuring us that they are remedying that. However, let me give you one example. Even though they may be trying to remedy it, most schools, they cannot remedy it in every school. For example, school number 12. School number 12, you said glowing things about school number 12, but school number 12 has a ventilation system that is not compatible with minimum standards. They cannot accept, their system cannot accept MERS 13 filters, which is the minimum standard. They can at best accept MERS 10 standards. So would you prefer
Hold up, the host has got to take the floor here. Come on, everybody. Hold on. Adam, I know point. Adam wants to close the loop on his point. I want Adam to have a chance to do it. And I do want Gypsy and Leslie to have a chance to kind of make some opening remarks, too. We will have plenty of time to talk through it. Go ahead. Go ahead, Adam.
So let me just finish my sentence. If school number 12 cannot even accommodate the minimum accepted professional standards for ventilation during COVID, then should we remain silent on that? We should tell the truth that if you're going to send your children to school number 12, you do so at your own risk. And we have a moral obligation to do that. Teachers do. 89% of teachers said that the district isn't ready, and they are absolutely correct. It isn't ready. They should actually, rather than doing it right away, returning, they should do it right. And that would take only a few weeks more for them to prepare and to replace those ventilation systems that are not compatible with minimum standards.
Okay, Gypsy, I'm going to let
I can report, though. I can report that those have all been replaced at this time, Dr. Urbanski. So we just received a report this morning, but I want to thank the RTA for raising this issue, because certainly we see this being addressed, and now our systems far surpass the minimum standards, which is not the MERC 13 filter, but I think the MERC 9 filter. So our standards in most of our buildings now, and I can't speak for facilities, of course, and our director of all of our facilities, but It is my understanding that we've gone to great expense as a district to ensure that we have the Merck 13 filters in. And I think a lot of that is prompted by the fact that, RTA has advocated for those standards.
Okay.
And so, you know.
Okay. Helpful. Gypsy, go ahead.
Sure. So just two quick things here. So one, I'm looking at the RTA's website where Mr. Urbanski provides an update on ventilation on February 9th of last week. School 12 is not listed here among the schools that, according to RTA, don't have good ventilation. So a little bit of fact-checking here. And it just says that only nine schools, not half of the schools, as Mr. Urbanski just said, did not have the proper Merck filters. But I would like Mr. Urbanski to answer the question about what is the professional development that RTA is offering the teachers. You're deflecting the question here.
Well, it is not the responsibility of a teachers union to provide professional development for a system that is not doable. Simultaneous teaching isn't working anywhere. And we did a lot of research and checked with unions and with districts throughout the country. And they're saying this is crazy. It's simply not doable. Why would we provide professional development for something that cannot work? It's the district that came up with a crazy idea that you can actually do right by kids by attending simultaneously to those in front of you and those who are remote, even if you don't have the technology or the preparation to do so. It's crazy. And I think that Mrs. Malloy made a good point when she said that by doing this, you're actually providing less instruction to all the children. So I think they switched from a system that most children and most teachers have already learned how to manage, which is remote learning, which is not as good as in-person learning, but you have to pick a lane, pick either remote or in-person and do it separately. And that can be done. Most school districts in America are doing it, but our district, I think, recklessly came up with an idea that it can be done simultaneously. And when we begged them to show us how it can be done, they weren't able to do it.
Okay, let me let Gypsy respond to that, then I want to bring Leslie in. Go ahead, Gypsy.
So I can speak for our experience that, again, these blank generalized statements that things don't work are really kind of like actually dismissive of all the effort that teachers are doing to creatively figuring it out. I know that teachers in my kids' school are, at least in our grade, they figure out a model where, one teacher is in person, the other one is remote. The kids are split between hybrid and remote. And then on remote days and Thursdays and Fridays, they go back to their home room teacher. So I think teachers are being very creative about this. I cannot speak from the side of how the experience has been for remote parents. But I can say that teachers are applying a lot of flexibility and creativity to make the model work. And I think the important thing about it is that, unlike Mr. Urbanski said that, or maybe it was Ms. Malloy, said that it was, why do it so quickly? It's not quickly at all. It's a phased reopening. And it's not like we're asking, that the district is making everybody, mandating everybody to go back in person. It is phased. There's lots of learnings that need to happen and lots of things that need to improve. That is for sure. And that is not perfect. But I think pushing for moving back to fully remote is not going to be just going to be disruptive and harmful for children, but it's also going to be disruptive and harmful for teachers. So, Mr. Urbanski, pick a lane. Well, let's pick a lane of progress and moving forward, not pick a lane of continuous reversals and moving the goalposts farther and farther away.
I want to let Leslie Knox make some comments too. Go ahead, Leslie.
So I've been listening, and it has been an active discussion. When Ms. Malloy was talking earlier about her making the choices between remote and hybrid and having the choice of 4 days in person, it really made me wonder where in the city she was looking at, because I always knew I only had the choice of at most 2 days in person.
Oh, I think although you misheard me. That wasn't what I had said.
I'm not done yet. Thank you. As you mentioned, you do teach in Brighton, and the students in the suburbs have been able to go back for 4 days since September. And if it was such a concern for you as far as health and welfare, why isn't there a larger voice coming from you, even with your school board backing, to say that this is not safe for the kids in Brighton? Or have you seen anything in Brighton that can be transplanted to the city? Because as you mentioned, and as Dr. Urbanski mentioned, working together and to compromise and prepare the teachers to work in this system is something that benefits us all. So I'm also wondering where parent involvement comes in, because there doesn't seem to be a consistent voice for parent involvement in the RTA, because quite honestly, we pay teacher salaries. If we did not send our kids to school, we would not need teachers. And we trust you with our future and our children. We want to have a voice in what comes next for our children. We don't particularly as a whole want to be dictated to about choices being made for our children without our voice being involved.
Let me ask you a quick question on that, Leslie. You've heard Adam Urbanski and RTA mention that in their surveys, and they will also point to the fact that only 30% of students are back. That's an indication to them that parents, at least in a current plurality or majority, aren't comfortable with students back in the classroom. What do you think, Leslie?
There's also a capacity issue within the classroom dictated by COVID. So there's fewer slots to begin with. So even if 60% of the parents want to go back, it's not possible right now. But I strongly believe parents should have the choice to make that decision. If you're going to be on the wait list, okay, you made a choice. This is what you would like for your child. You have been empowered to say and have at least some part of a voice in what happens to your child next as far as their education goes. If you decide to keep your child home and be remote, you still have that choice. Why it seems like the RTA is advocating for parents to not have choices in dictating what should happen next without clear and consistent consultation with parents.
Okay. Amy, do you want to respond? It sounded like you thought
there
was some
confusion.
Yeah,
sure. Where would you like me to start?
Well,
first of all, I want to say that I respect our parents who are here today, and I know that you don't represent all of our parents in the district, but I respect that you are here and that you are representing one of the many voices in our district. I didn't mention that I work in Brighton, but since you brought it up, I'm happy to talk about that. First of all, our hybrid model that we have adopted here in RCSD is not the same model that you see in the suburbs. We had a hybrid model that was very similar last summer when we were all tasked as districts to develop models of hybrid learning. We had one developed that was a, when you say 4 day a week model, my kids in Brighton are not in school 4 days a week. It's a hybrid model where we have cohorts of students. One cohort will go on, you know, a Monday, Thursday, and then the other cohort of students will be in the Tuesday, Friday model. And then Wednesday is a remote learning day for all students. So that's how it operates there. That is not the same model that RCSD is adopting. Not to mention we either have remote sections of courses or hybrid sections of courses, and teachers are assigned either hybrid models or a hybrid section or remote section. And then some of us at the secondary level, which is what I teach two sections of hybrid, so I see different cohorts of kids on different days, so I'm living that reality. And then I also have three sections of fully remote learners. And I understand that there are some buildings within the RCSD that were given the opportunity to do that. If you look at the Montessori Academy or the Montessori School, their building principal has been able to figure things out staffing-wise
that allowed for some teachers to teach remotely and some to teach in person, because they believe that that is the best learning model. And they were not necessarily in favor of a simultaneous instructional model. My concern, and I want to emphasize something here, that I fully support students going back into the classroom. I want to see our students back into the classroom, and I want our parents able to have that choice. But what has happened is that we now see a model that is being employed that is actually increasing inequity across our district. Why is it that, you know, the 70% of kids that aren't going to be back in school, we know that a huge number of those people were the undecideds, the people who didn't make a decision. But we also have schools that went ahead and resurveyed their parents. You have the East High School. They did a survey, and they went from having something like 24 or 25% of their families choosing to go back hybrid. They upped that to 45%, which is what we want to see in all our schools, right? We want to see all our kids back in the classroom learning. And so I am so glad that there are parent advocates like you both in the community who are out there, who are advocating. And I feel really pained. First of all, I'm not an RTA member. I do belong to a teachers union, but it's not the RTA. And I don't just represent the RTA's voices. I think we all want to be back in school with our students. And I, you know, I've had kids switch between my remote sections and our hybrid, and they've gone back and forth. And I love being able to finally see my own students in person. Are we providing a model here in RCSD that allows for more families to then choose that option later on? If we're only serving 30% of our students right now, we need to serve more. Why aren't more kids, what are we doing to encourage kids to get back in the classroom? And I want to see that. And I think that if a model that only allows for half or 30% of our students to come back and doesn't allow for a hot lunch to be served during the school day, I think that we're actually creating a level of inequity, and we're taking away from the overall quality of all of our students' learning at this point. We need to be creative as teachers, and let me tell you, teachers are being creative across the board. I applaud every single teacher in RCSD who is making this model work. And, you know, like you said, like a school 12, right? Like they have instructional coaches for technology. And, you know, we do see some buildings that are just better equipped for this new learning model than others. And I think that we just want to be really careful that we're not pitting each other or pitting people against one another. We do need to come up with a collective solution here. We need to work together. We don't have a model that's being implemented right now that can serve more students.
Well,
and we have our most disadvantaged students who are going to be falling further and further behind because they're stuck in a remote model.
I want to hit that point that Amy's making. Gypsy Escobar, when you hear Amy Malloy mention that when you look at inequity, that the current setup is actually increasing inequity in a district that is already, you know, facing inequities compared to perhaps suburban counterparts. And so within the district, she sees an increase in equity based on the current setup, and that's why she's opposed to, or at least not sending kids back right now. Gypsy, how do you see the question of inequity?
So one of the reasons that we wrote that petition was because the push to not reopen, at least with the phased hybrid approach, actually perpetuates entrenched systemic racism. And it perpetuates the gaps in education and the racial and class disparities in learning. So I'm a little bit confused by Mrs. Malloy's approach. If we send everybody back to remote, is that what she's asking for?
No, I'm not advocating for that.
Okay, because I was a little bit confused by what you were saying, because when the petition came out, which is in response to the RTA resolution to not reopen. We were very concerned about the consequences for low-income children of color, particularly in the Rochester area, who are falling through the cracks, who are not coming to remote, because they, you know, the parents cannot be there to supervise their work, or because they don't have the technology or the wherewithal, or even parents who had to, particularly mothers who had to drop off the labor force to supervise the children. And this is a conversation you had earlier, Evan, with Assemblywoman Lanford. So I think if we go back to remote, we actually create more of that disparity gap. And there's lots of studies that have come out nationally about the issue of gaps in learning that are affecting particularly low-income and students of color throughout the nation if we stay remote. So if we really believe in social and racial justice, what we need to do is figure out a model where we can safely all go back to school, but without mandating it to parents one way or the other. You know, I think parents do still need to have the choice to select between what they feel is safest and the best option for their children.
You know, can I just interject something here, Evan?
Keep it tight. Go ahead.
I wanted to say, Gypsy, I 100% agree with you. And so just to be clear, I fully support having students go back to in-person learning. And what you said, just in terms of racial justice and equity across our district, I would challenge the district to look into which of our students are actually able to take advantage now under this current setup of this learning. Which of our students, and I would argue that some of the loudest voices sometimes in our district are the most privileged voices or the most socioeconomically advantaged voices very often in our district, which is, should not be the case. However, which of our students are actually able to now take part in the hybrid learning option? Are they our middle class and upper middle class students? Who's in our classrooms? And have we now created a system where our most disadvantaged learners who maybe didn't have the parent voice or the parent involvement, now they are stuck in a remote model that is going to hurt them down the road, and now they're stuck there. So what can we do as a district to grow this model? So I agree with you that we need to all be back in school, and my concern is that by hastily moving forward when we hadn't answered those questions yet is actually putting our most disadvantaged students at further risk. And there is so much social injustice in the current system that we are seeing and what is unraveling. And if you look at some of our more advantaged schools, some of our wealthier looking schools, I guess you could say, the ones that have gone through the FNP process of modernization, et cetera, we see many students who are now back in person who appear, at least, to be from our middle class cohort of parents. And I worry that some of our poorest students are now not able to take advantage of the hybrid learning option. And that should be a choice for all families. I agree.
Amy, are you certain of that? Because I'm not sure what you mean when you say students who appear to be from wealthier backgrounds.
What I mean by that, too, I'm talking about some of our facilities that are have been modernized. Which of our students are coming back? I've tried to ask these questions of the district, and there has been crickets. You know, like no one has.
But you're making an assertion. You're making an assertion, and I'm not sure there's data to back that up. And I don't know what it means when you say. Well, no, I understand that. I don't know what it means when you say the students who are back in the classroom, they appear to be from the wealthier backgrounds. I don't know.
You know, if you look at even some of our schools, that if you look, you know, we can't look at socioeconomic background other than the fact that you have, if you're looking at who's on free or reduced price lunch, right? All of our students receive free lunch and free breakfast every morning. My children included are part of that. You know, so that is difficult, but we do need to gather that information. And when I go to schools and I see some of the loudest parents who have spoken out in favor of that, and I know personally that these are people from upper middle class backgrounds who now have seats in schools.
Okay.
That's what I mean by that.
All right, let's
explore this data.
I've got to let Leslie Knox have the mic because she has not had as much time, and then I'm going to turn to Adam. Go ahead, Leslie, if you want to respond to that.
So when Ms. Malloy was talking about who has the voice, it's a matter of opportunity as well, and upper middle class people having more time to have voice is a facet of being better off, like you, Ms. Malloy. You have the time to be on the school board. You also have the time to advocate and clearly make your somewhat opinions heard and usually clearly understood. And I applaud you for doing that. It is excellent that you have the time and the capacity to do that. Unfortunately, not everyone is as gifted as that. So in this case, your assumptions of assessing who's coming back by merely looking to assess what social class they belong to is thoroughly insulting and a clear example of the systematic racism and inequity and quite unfortunate privilege that you are showing that really does not have me believing that you understand the change you could put into place through your position and with your voice. And it really saddens me that your points aren't clearly coming across due to some missteps that you've already made. And bringing up the school lunch, nobody likes a school lunch. That's okay. There's food. At this point, we have bigger fish to fry, like our children's education, not just that they have the option to eat, but that they have the option to learn, which will feed them for a lifetime instead of just one school lunch.
Absolutely. They absolutely need to have the skills to be successful in life. And, you know, I might seem relatively privileged to you, but you certainly don't know my background, as I don't know your background. So I try to reserve those types of judgments. And so I feel like that's important to point out.
I would never make a blanket statement
about your family or where you come from financially. I would never do that to you. I applaud I applaud both of you for being here and for being one or two voices of the many voices in our community. And we need to make sure that we're uplifting our parent voices.
Yes,
and there's
why
so
we're
many
also
ways
making
to do that,
sure so. To clarify what we say.
Okay.
Fantastic. Support that.
Let's let Adam Urbanski respond to some of what we've heard. Go ahead, Adam.
Well, let me say this. Bottom line is that teachers want what parents want. We want children to return to school, and we want teachers to return to school when it's safe to do so and when the district has a doable and plausible instructional program. I would assume that that's what parents want too. As a matter of fact, we're beginning with the assumption, we always begin with the assumption, that parents love their children and they want what's best for them. And we would never deny them the right to make a choice. Absolutely not. But we have an obligation as teachers to give our professional opinion about the quality of the instructional program that is being proposed. And if the majority of physicians said that this treatment won't work, it's not reasonable, the public would listen. So teachers' professional opinion must be revealed, and then parents will make their own decision.
Adam, can I ask you a question about that?
But let me just say one more thing, Evan, and then yes, but let me say one more thing. And don't always believe what you're being told by the bureaucracy. For example, one of the parents, I don't remember if it was Ms. Knox or Ms. Escobar, said that, well, the ventilation system at school number 12 is now fixed. It is not. It cannot be fixed without being replaced. It cannot be fixed without being replaced because it's not compatible with filters that represent the minimum professional standard.
All right, I'm done with the school 12 filter issue. I just want to ask you, Adam, I think what the parents are saying, and they'll correct me if I'm wrong here, is what they see is there is no perfect such situation. But a continuing setup where students cannot be together, cannot be in a classroom, is untenable. And they would probably say that if you were in the woods and someone suffered a serious injury and there was a doctor in the group and the doctor said, well, ideally we'd be in a sterilized hospital doing this and I can't, you know, I would want my gloves and everything else to do the surgery. And the other people standing around are going, look, we don't have that option right now. Take your shirt off and use it as a tourniquet. Stop stop the bleeding and try to keep this person alive. That's the goal number one here. And what they seem to be saying is, in the RCSD, from their perspective as parents, that you're waiting for a perfect situation before you go back, instead of saying, no, we're going to do the best we can. It's not ideal, but we're not going to make the perfect the enemy of the good. What do you say to that, Adam?
Well, I would say that if we were in the woods and there was an emergency, then definitely we should make the best of it. But we're not in the woods. And this is not a matter of either or, either not ever going back or going back right now when it's not safe or instructionally productive. So what we ask the district, we never ask the district to remain remote forever. All we've asked them is for a 2 or 3 weeks delay until they get their act together, both in terms of safety and instruction, and they refuse to do that.
Okay. Gypsy Escobar, about a minute left. Final word to you. Go ahead.
I just want to say that the way you represented our position, Evan, is absolutely right. We cannot let the perfect be the enemy of the good. We got to start somewhere. Even if that somewhere has still problems, but we cannot improve if we're stuck somewhere. And we cannot keep moving the goalposts farther and farther away.
And I'll let Leslie jump in as well. I know you haven't had as much time. Go ahead, Leslie.
So I also want to state that you did get our position and our view accurately, and that the quality of the instruction in the RCSD system has been a concern for longer than the pandemic has. So that is not the place we need to start right now. Thank you.
Okay. Well, look, I think there's a lot of I think everyone wants what's best for students. I think there is a difference of opinion on where to go right now. But I am always grateful for the time and the opportunity to explore it at length. And one person who has always been able to do that is Adam Urbanski, and we appreciate that, the president of the Rochester Teachers Association. Please stay in touch. Keep us apprised of what you're hearing from your members, and let's continue the conversation. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
Amy Malloy is a member of the school board, a parent and a teacher herself. Amy, thanks for the time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Leslie Knox, RCSD parent leader. Nice having you, Leslie. Thanks for making the time for the program.
It was a pleasure.
Gypsy Escobar, a parent as well in the district. Good luck to you and your family. Thanks for being with us, Gypsy.
Thanks for having me.
And much love to everyone, no matter where you stand on these issues. I know this is hard. I know this is not ideal. And I do hope that we can find ways to keep talking about this together. Thanks to everyone who participated. Thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice weekend. We'll talk to you Monday on member-supported public radio.